Right, good morning to everybody. About to continue with Michaelis in just a few minutes. And we're picking up from chapter 4. We're going to take up verses 17. And this actually continues right into chapter 5, the first two verses, 1 and 2. And we'll just start in a few minutes. We'll read through the verses and then raise the questions and try to explain them as we do. Good morning to you too, Laura. How's the sound today? It was coming through all right. The sound is good. Just type audio okay. Okay, thanks, Laura. Good morning, Doug. Good morning, Cal.
Good morning, Rabbi. Jim and Josh, you still there?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning. How's everybody doing? Chapter 4, verse 17. Okay, so let's continue. So King Solomon says, the nation and what to have some reference points. So they're arbitrary here. The verse is not that. The verse is. And he is close to hear you, close to hear your words. And what should you guard your feet from? From giving sacrifices like fools, for they do not know how to do evil.
They do not know how to do evil.
That's the literal reading. Ki einam yodim las asra. They do not know how to do evil.
Oh, because my translation says, for they know not that they do evil.
Okay. Ki einam yodim. For they do not know to do evil. You'll see, but that's not even a literal, it has to be a question. A fool is a person who does evil all the time.
Right.
Like you said, he ainam yodim, but they do not know that they do. But it doesn't say that in the verse. It says, the literal reading, as best as I can do, is, for they know not, they do not know to do evil. Okay. Similarly, I mean, that's the beginning of the verse. Guard your feet when you go to the house of God. What is your feet? To see again, we're accustomed already to the fact that there's this much more than meets the eye. Okay, so again, what is this? His first statement is to guard your feet as you go to the house of God, and he is close to hear. He can hear your prayers. The house of God would mean the temple. But what should you guard your feet from? From giving as the fools give their sacrifices. For they do not know to do evil. They do not know how to do evil. We'll come back to it. We'll read the commentary on it. Then he continues and he says, do not be excited upon your mouth, or in your heart do not be quick to bring out words, to bring out a matter, to say something before God, because God is in heaven and you are on earth, therefore let your words be few. And you see the following verse, which is 5:2, starts off with the word because, so that has to be a continuation, so we have to keep reading. And what is it saying? Because a dream comes because of a multitude of matters, and the voice of the fools also comes forth with a with numerous things, with many words. So he says three things that you should guard your feet when you go to the house of God, and he's close to hear. And what should you guard yourself from? From sacrificing like fools, for they know not how to do it. And then he continues and says, do not be excited upon your mouth, or in your heart you should not be quick to bring out words before God, because God is in heaven and you are on earth, therefore let your words be few. So what does this say? What does it mean? God's in heaven, you're on earth. So why is it, how is that an explanation of not you know, being excited to say something or to bring out something from your heart quickly? And then finally, he gives a reason for that. And that is because a dream comes. All of a sudden, he introduces dreams. What does dreams have to do with anything? But he says, because a dream comes with a multitude of matters. I mean, there's so much in a dream. There's so much content in a dream. And the rabbis say that there's no dream that doesn't have superfluous content. And it says not only that, but also the voice of fools comes about with numerous words. They speak a lot.
I'm sorry, Rabbi, you said there's no dream that has superfluous content.
Right.
So they're saying every dream, every part of every dream has some meaning.
No, the opposite. That there's no dream that doesn't include superfluous content.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure. Now, it's very hard to make out what the meaning is of these verses without going to the context. Maybe that's the story of the verse. We're going to read through them. And if you want to take notes, they say a bit here. So Sforno says as follows. He says, guard your feet when you go to the house of God, and God is close to hear your words. So when you go to his house, that house, I mean the temple, that is found, that is very honored, and that is of God the Great. Therefore, when you do this, guard your feet from giving sacrifices like fools. And he says, you should guard yourself from the form of how the fools give when they sacrifice. Because they do not know any reason why they do this. But they just follow what was inherited from the custom of their fathers that they have now in their hands. So he says, that's foolish. So he says, they don't know that they do evil. So he says, be careful. Guard yourself from this. Because it is not enough that it is not God's will at all. But this will even be evil in God's eyes, and he'll be angered against you. As God says, and he quotes from the prophets, who requested this from you, from your hands? All you're trampling in my courtyards. Meaning, the prophet talks about how the Jews come and they go through the acts of sacrifice. And to God, when they're doing it without understanding, and God refers to this as a mere trampling of his courtyard, of his temple. So what are they addressing there? They're addressing the notion that people feel that, oh, if I just go through the action, oh, that's good, that's sufficient. But he says, no, it's not only bad that they don't know why they're doing it, and they're just repeating the acts of their fathers, but God will be angry. And we have to ask, why is it that he's angry in this matter, in terms of sacrifice and prayer? Why is that something which doesn't talk about other activities like putting on the tzitzos, the tzitzis, the tefillin? But this seems to be addressing specifically when you come to the house of God and he hears you. So hearing is talking about prayer. So the matter that we're discussing is prayer. Okay, so that's what Sforno says. And he continues and he says, do not be excited upon your mouth to pray on a rote manner of your tongue. And what's very interesting is in his explanation here in the Hebrew, he says he uses the same word as foot. So the word regel in Hebrew could mean foot. It could also mean accustomed. Somebody is ragil. He does something as a regular act. So he says, do not pray, which is just accustomed upon your lips. So he says, do not be quick to bring out a matter from your heart before God. And then he explains why. You shouldn't do this before you focus your heart. As the rabbis have stated, that they're the early pious Jews. What did they do? They used to wait a certain amount of time, an hour, before they would pray. They would focus and contemplate what they're about to do before they pray, in order that they can focus their heart properly. And he says, why shouldn't you do this? Why shouldn't you just repeat and do the actions of sacrifice? Like, because this is what our forefathers have inherited to us, and why shouldn't I just pray in a very rote manner that I just have accustomed myself to daily, three times a day? Why shouldn't I do this? Because God is in heaven. And he is in an existence that is devoid of any physicality. And you are on earth. So he says that he's giving you a clue as to why there's a negativity. Let me just see if people on the screen are saying they don't have audio. Tina and Laura, do you still have audio? If you just, type a message on the screen, it looks like Naomi and Abner are having a problem. And unfortunately, the way the internet works is that the connection to different parts, to different locations, goes through different channels, different service providers. So some people can hear, and some people will have a broken connection depending on the route that the connection takes. So I just want to see if everybody's having a problem or not. Okay, sound is not so good, because that means that the sound is not good. That means we're publishing it okay. It's just the route that it's taking, maybe because of the weather, is making a problem. So I guess we'll just have to be patient. Hopefully it resolves. There's nothing we can do from here.
Rabbi?
Yes?
Talking about the heaven and earth, God in heaven.
Right.
Is that for us to basically keep in mind our place in comparison to God, that we're nothing and God is everything?
That's true. But there may be more, because the way Sforno reads, I don't think you have the English in front of you, but he says that God is an existence which is devoid of all physicality. So he's giving you a clue. So there's something about that.
Rabbi, it sounds like Sforno was saying that, excuse me, you're better off not to pray at all than to do it hastily or do it kind of, just because you've been taught to.
That's right.
Without the recognition of who you're addressing.
Right. And also what you're saying. Because you have to go back to the fact that he says that they do not know to do evil. So what does that mean? Let me just address them. Maybe Laura or Tina, maybe you could write a message to Abner on screen since he can't hear. Ask him to log off and maybe try again. I appreciate that. Okay. Right. But again, keep in mind, Cal, that there is the statement. It says that God is in existence as devoid of anything that's physical. Okay. And let's just finish up Sforno as he continues. And he says, okay, you shouldn't quickly say something, because then you won't be able to intend on what is what is proper to God. Therefore, he says, let your words be few, meaning don't drag out, don't be too profuse, I guess, in your requests and your prayers. More than what is needed. Why? Because perhaps you'll turn aside from them, from what is fitting, and you'll bring upon yourself sin. And he continues and says, why should you do this? Because just as a dream comes with a multitude of matters, and the voice of a fool also has a lot of content. Doesn't mean it's valuable, just the opposite. So he explains, he says, just like a dream occurs with many useless pieces of information, and it comes with a lot of parts of your imagination. And he says also, like the rabbis say, that a person thinks the whole day, and at night, in the evening, he sees it. And that's a true phenomenon. That a lot of things a person thinks about during the day, he sees in a dream.
So I take it from this that it is considered a sin to have your mind wander during prayers.
It's incorrect. I don't know if you can say sin. A lot of times the things are really bothering a person and he's really not culpable. You know, it's not really held responsible if he's, let's say he's really has angst over something. It's hard to do that. But, you know, the person has to do the best he can.
Right, but this makes it sound like if you know that you can't fully concentrate, you'd be better off not to pray at all.
It sounds like that's what he's saying, yes. That it actually brings sin. So therefore, a person has to work on himself so this way he doesn't dismiss prayer and he actually prepares himself properly. And he says also, be like the fools, they have a lot of imagination. That's why they're foolish. I mean, the person is not involved in increase in his study and pondering the Torah and learning new concepts. So the mind is always active. It has to be doing something. So if it's not receptive in terms of acquiring new knowledge, it's going to be doing a projectionary type of activity, whereas the imagination is at work. Now, imagination, of course, is a very important thing. That's why we have it. But it's to be used in terms of imagining ideas and solutions to problems that we see. So a person is not involved in the thoughts, and then, you know, in terms of thinking about truth and Torah, and you know, God's creation, so then what is his mind going to be preoccupied with? His own imaginations. And he'll turn himself aside from what's proper. That's what Sforno says. Okay.
So, Rabbi, go ahead.
Isn't it very difficult for a regular person to maintain focus for a long period of time to do that?
You could increase that, though.
I mean, if you're a novice or a regular person and you don't have time every day, but you want to pray, and you do, but your mind starts to go off to other things and you snap back, but you do this quite a bit, is it better to not pray at all? How do you even start, I guess? Because you have to start somewhere.
Right. So, I mean, I think God understands that a person's level is at, and the person is not, you can't just write off the prayer I mean, it's an obligation. So what the person will have to do then is take the time to focus. And if it's something difficult at first, training helps to a person increase their. Rabbi Chait once spoke about how a person who first starts to learn Torah, so his ability to focus is going to be short at first, but he can increase that with training. And the truth is, when the person's reality, his sense of reality tells him that God is real and everything in the Torah is true, he becomes much more attached to God and more desirous of prayer because he understands that God controls everything. And the person will not, you know, he'll do just the opposite. He'll run to pray when he's supposed to.
Rabbi, since a Jewish person has a different halakha on this than a Noahide, it would seem like then perhaps the Noahides need to take a different approach. Because my understanding is there's no obligation to pray except in time of danger. type of discipline of the mind so that we can get to a point where we can focus for, you know, a certain period.
Yeah, it's not the prayer itself that, you know, as a Jew, we repeat three times a day that's going to be the only cause to improve focus in terms of your studies, the Torah studies, and having the right philosophy. That will equally engender in a Noahide the ability to have focus. So it's not completely dependent upon prayer. And the truth is, if a Jew prays three times a day and doesn't really study the Torah and just goes to work and goes through the motions, so then it's like a prayer of fools that Sforno is mentioning over here. Actually, King Solomon says it, because he's just repeating it. And that's what I think he means by the first words in 17, where he says, guard your feet. So, as Sforno hints, and I believe it's a hint, he's saying, as I said before, foot, also the same root, means just a custom, a rote type of activity. So maybe what King Solomon is saying is, guard your actions that are rote when you go to the house of God. So it's the same word, it's interchangeable. And maybe they use that because the person doesn't even have to concentrate when they walk. It's absent-minded. When you go from one place to another, you don't have to concentrate left, right as you're walking. So perhaps that's where it's getting the similarity from, that it's something which you do most often more than any other activity, is the use of your legs to walk. So it says, don't treat your prayer in that same way, where it's just like your absent-minded walking. So perhaps that's why he uses that word over here. I mean, guard your feet really is a hint. Guard yourself from being like a foot, like a rote type of activity. Now, maybe we can answer one of the questions I raised is, why is it in connection with prayer as opposed to other commands that this warning comes up from King Solomon? And I thought, Josh, do you have a question before?
Well, I was just going to bring up the idea of God in heaven here on earth, that God is totally devoid of physical. Just talking about, like, the fool will, imagine that they have, some knowledge of God, or, project. You know what I'm saying?
That the fool is because they're projecting and because they have no knowledge of God?
Right. So, I guess I've heard the idea before, the certain praises of God, or even the descriptive type things, we couldn't even really say unless it was in the Torah.
Right.
And the pages put them in the prayers.
But there's a Talmudic portion which talks about that, maybe that you're referring to, that there was one person that was praying, and he was saying the words in the prayer, but then adding on more of his own accolades to God. So then he finished, one rabbi said to him, have you finished? Have you completed all your praises to God? Meaning, who are you to start saying you know better than the men of the great assembly who formulated the prayer? These were great, righteous intellects. And now you're modifying what they said, you think you know better. So you're right, that's also a true idea. But why do you think it's regarding prayer that this warning comes up? Why couldn't it equally admonish people? Why couldn't King Solomon equally admonish people in terms of, when they put on tefillin, or they shake the esrog, the citron, and the luluf on the Sukkot holiday, or giving charity, or whatever it is? Why is it specifically prayer?
Rabbi, maybe because when you do any of those other commandments, the focus on the commandment is the action itself. So if I'm shaping a lulav, I'm shaping the lulav. It's not necessarily what I'm thinking about at that moment. It's about the physical action in the physical world. But prayer is entirely about the mind. And where one's focus is. So the centrality of that action is about being able to be focused and have, I guess, correct ideas, whereas you could be doing some of the other commandments and fulfill the commandment, but not necessarily understand all the ideas behind it.
Very good. Excellent. Because prayer is basically an activity of the mind, where the others are really physical performances. Right, well said. Okay.
Are we to understand the sacrifices then in 17 as being like literally sacrifices, or that itself is actually an activity of the mind?
That also requires, as a matter of fact, I remember Rabbi Chait saying too that the area of sacrifice and all the laws that pertain to temple and worship have the most intricate laws, and maybe the most numerous too. And that's because when a person is doing an act where he's now coming close to God, he's relating to God, he's not shaking the lulav, he's not doing the act on the object, but now he's in dialogue, so to speak, with God, and even sacrifices and bringing them before God. So there, the biggest danger exists, that the religious emotion will overpower him, and he'll have all these the wrong notions. Even the high priest has to be very, very careful when he goes into the Holy of Holies, that one time in the year, when on Yom Kippur, and he comes before, so to speak, God. And what he has to do when he goes into that room is he has to light the incense and smoke up the room. So why is that the one activity he does? Because even the high priest, and even one of the holiest days of the year, there's still a danger of imagining something physical in connection with God. Because that's just the way we're designed. And our reality is everything we sense is real is something that can be seen. For that very reason, when the Jews were at Sinai, God commanded Moses to tell the people to rope off. He commanded him to rope off the mountain and don't let anybody go up the mountain. If they do, they'll be killed. Why? Because there's the emotion to maybe want to see something in connection with God. And you see that in an identical story, that when the ark was stolen by the Philistines, and they were plagued, one plague after the next, and they finally sent it back to the Jews. So the Jews who saw it, they saw the ark coming back to the Jewish land, to Israel, so they ran and they opened up the ark and looked inside. And the verses there in things in Judges, it says that God killed them. And there was 57,000 people that were killed. So there's a whole interpretation of what that is, but a large number of people were killed because they thought they could see something in connection with God. So that's idolatry. If you think that there's anything physical in connection with God, so that's the worst sin. So you see how that's very important. And that emotion comes out even in sacrifice. Especially in sacrifice when we're in the temple. Because now they feel they're related to God, as opposed to other commands where you're not in the temple and so on and so forth. And you're not in the place where the miracles were all the time. Because it's a tradition we have that there were a lot of miracles that took place in the temple regularly. So, even though... What's that?
Well, the idea of the temple, the house of God, almost, and I could lead a person to describe location.
Right. And that's what King Solomon said, I believe it was a public speech, when he said to the people that the heavens and the heavens of heavens can't hold God. Certainly this house that I've built. So he made it clear that, and for all Jews to read, that's written in the Torah, in the prophets. So he wanted to make that clear, because there is that danger. But you see that was a concession. Sforno says that the whole construction, the entire temple is really a concession to man, because it was not really going to exist, were it not for the fact that the Jews sinned with the golden calf. So because they needed some sort of an expression, and they wanted to have some sort of a tangible means, but they erred, and they created a golden calf, and those sinners were killed. So Sforno says, in response to that, God constructed a whole method by which you can have a physical method of service, but it's going to be highly detailed. And you have to follow all these intellectual laws. And that will keep the mind away from escaping into the imagination and sinning. Like the sons of Aaron, Moses' nephew. His two nephews went in, and they brought a fire that was not commanded, and they were killed because they came up with their own imaginary. That's what the whole word, avodah zarah, strange worship, something which is not what God commanded. So, but yes, to answer your question, so just like prayer is like, you know, Doug said, it's an intellectual activity as opposed to other commands that are merely, you know, physical actions. So, sacrifice also is a very detailed, and it has to be, there's a danger there. So that's why this admonishment of King Solomon is regarding prayer and sacrifice. Because that's, there's actually a statement of the rabbis in the Talmud that the idolatrous emotion came out from the Holy of Holies as a fiery lion. And it goes into a whole story over there. But, of course, that's not literal. But what does it mean to say? It means to say that the idolatrous emotion is very powerful, like a fiery lion, like the strongest beast and the strongest element. But where does it come from? It comes from the temple, the Holy of Holies, meaning it's that area in the approach to God where the biggest danger is going to be, the greatest danger is. That's why the high priest had to incense the entire room to make a veil between him and what was in there. In order that it should be, and that's what the Maimonides says also, that there's a tradition that the day of revelation was a cloudy day and raining, meaning the people have to have a sense that you can't really see what's going on here. And Moses himself tells the people, he says, guard yourself, you know, guard your souls exceedingly. And don't forget that you did not see any form at Sinai, only a voice. Right? No form, you didn't see anything physical. There isn't anything physical about God. Because that could be the greatest sin. Okay. Now, what does it mean that the fools, you're gonna don't be like the fools with your sacrifices, that they don't know how to do evil? It seems to be like this, the opposite. So Ibn Ezra answers very simply that what does it mean? They don't know how to do evil. Means they don't know how to do his will, God's will. Meaning, and it's interesting, if you say a person doesn't know how to do evil, so that means he can do it and not know it. You see? Meaning, since there's no sense of what is evil and what is good, so a person's not going to know when he does something wrong. Maybe that's why they translated it, Doug, as you quoted. They do not know that they do evil. Because that's really the sense of what he's saying.
I see. Right.
But you see also another idea is that what he's addressing is that don't think that the simple act of sacrifice or prayer is something which God receives, 100% of the time. No, don't think it's just the rote activity of prayer. It's not the action. It has to be the intent. That's why Sforno says, don't do something in a rote action. And that's what the prophet said to the people. Did God ever ask for all your trampling in his courtyard? Is this what God wants, that you just go through the actions, but your thoughts are improper? Or you don't even know why you're doing it or what you're doing? So then he says in 5:1, do not be excited upon your mouth, or don't let your heart be quick to bring out words before God, because God's in heaven and you are on earth. So what is the clue that he gave us? This morning he gave us by saying that God is an existence that is devoid of anything physical. Meaning our existence is what? It is physical. And therefore what? What's the next step? He's trying to give you an explanation now.
everything physical is limited. So a person should recognize their limit.
You should recognize their limit. But what's the negativity involved? It seems to be saying that there's something negative here due to the fact that we are on earth and God is in heaven. So, Ibn Ezra says that it gets caught up. It wanders because of the involvements of the world, of the physical world. And he says also there's nothing lower than you. God's in heaven, and you're on earth, and there's nothing lower than you. Meaning the preoccupation with the physical is the cause of why people have the wrong ideas. That's what he means to tell you, that God's in heaven. He knows what's absolutely true. Heaven means God. God's realm is he knows absolute knowledge. But you're on earth. So that's going to contribute to having false values. Let's give me 1 minute. I'm going to see what Ibn Ezra says. And the idea also about to not be excited in your mouth, which can bring out a matter quickly from your heart, means that's symptomatic of the emotions, not of prolonged thought and focus on what God's intent is. Okay, so we understand now why the concept of an excited response or a quick response, both emanate from the emotions and not from thought. And that's why he also says at the end, let your words be few, because when, as he'll explain, he says, just like a dream, he says, because a dream comes with a multitude of matters that are useless or superfluous. And he says, also the voice of a fool is with many matters. What is he saying? He's saying it's one source for both. A dream is something which man makes. Many people look at dreams as, it's alien to me and I was just shown something. I was inspired. I mean, we don't have prophecy anymore. So a dream is purely the creation of the person's unconscious. And the emotions are running free because the intellect and the control and the focus and the intellectual sequence that normal thoughts have when awake is not existing there. In a dream, that's why it's very hard to remember. The sequence is completely all over the place. It's scattered. When something has a sequence, then it's easier to remember. But since the dream is numerous projections, numerous feelings and desires that we're outletting. So therefore, it's hard to recall. But the fact is that just as a dream is something which is created and has so much going on. Why does it have so much going on? Because the emotions are now completely free to roam, which is not true in the waking state. He says also, this is also similar to the words of fools. It's just like they're dreaming, meaning they have no intelligence and there's no control of what they're saying. So therefore, this is the problem. So if you let your words be few, you're not going to, like what he says at the end of verse 5:1, so then you're doing something to put a limit on the emotion. Say only what's needed, like Smyrna says. Ibn Ezra says the same thing. It's so many matters, and it's this futility in the dreams. And he says also, in any case, where a person speaks a lot, it brings him to sin. Even where it's necessary. That's what the rabbis say in Pirkei Avos, the ethics of the father, don't increase speech with a woman. And it says this is stated even with one's own wife, certainly with somebody else's wife. But the reverse is true too. Also, a woman should have increased speech with a man, because the speech is really used as an outlet of emotion. And if you speak a lot, that means you're aggravating, you're exciting the emotion towards the opposite sex. And therefore, it's exciting the sexual drive. That's what they mean. Not that there's anything negative about any one of the genders. But they mean to say that since speech is something which is used by people to vent, so realize that. And if there's too much speech, that means you're exciting the emotion. And the more you excite the emotion, the more it wants what it's involved with. They also say that one of the rabbis said that he found nothing better for a wise person than silence. So if we look at the verses again, we can give an overview now, just to make it more cohesive. And that is, in terms of prayer, in terms of the intellectual pursuit or with sacrifice, you know, God willing, when the temple is rebuilt. So we have to be careful in terms of just going through rote activity. And it really should be thought out, and like the early righteous people did, that they waited an hour before they prayed. They focused. They spent so much time lining up what their requests were and what their statements would be. And he says, don't be like those who go through the activity, but it's foolish. They don't even know how to do good or evil. Meaning they don't understand. They're just doing what was inherited to them. They haven't stopped to think about the proper way to pray, what the proper thoughts should be, what the proper requests should be. So he first says what we shouldn't do. Then he talks about the source of where the problem comes from. Where's the problem emanate from? So it's emanating from the fact that the person there's an excitement, or there's an emotion of to say something quick, and he hasn't focused his thoughts. And he said even that is something which it traces itself back to the fact that we're on earth and God is in heaven and we are on earth. So he tells you where the cause is coming from, the physical, the attachment to the physical. And let your words be few. Meaning do something, put a control on what you're saying. Have a limit. Make sure that you have a you guide your thoughts. And let them, how do you do that? You say few things. A request can be made very, very briefly. And he gives a proof, and he shows that it's if you look at a dream, it's just, you know, the person's just, you know, completely uncontrolled in terms of what the emotions, and therefore the dream can be many, many matters, and
you know, so much superfluous information, so much emotion, so many desires that are just coming out. And he says the fool is the same way. So he tries to show you from the existence of both the unconscious and the conscious how the increase in words is something which is has a lot of negativity to it. Has a lot of takes a person in the wrong direction. So that's that verse is really explaining why keeping the words minimal will be an assistance to you. Okay, let me pause here and see if there's any questions or comments.
I think we're good here.
You see how the verse is tied together now. It's important that we train ourselves in that, that we start appreciating how the verses are connected. And you see even the next verse, 5:3, continues on the theme of speech. He says, when you give a promise, an oath to God, do not delay to pay it. Because he has no desire in fools. What you promise, you should pay. So see here also he's going into speech, that a person uses speech in a certain way. And what is he addressing here? He's addressing the problem that people want to make a promise. It feels good. They want to show dedication to God. But then when it comes to reaching into their pockets and paying whatever it is, if I'm going to bring a sacrifice, if I'm going to give charity, so then a person has a tendency, when it comes down to it, to hold back. He doesn't want to part with his money. And that's why he says in the next verse, too, he says, better off a person should not make an oath than he makes an oath and doesn't pay it. Because there he's talking about the very emotion. You think, why is he saying that? It's better off that a person that he should not make an oath to God. Well, so why? Why does he say that? Because a person has the assumption that making an oath is a great thing. I'm dedicating something to God. But that is valueless if you do not pay it. But a person has a feeling, I'm going to say something, I'm going to make a pledge, and he says, I'm better off don't do that. Don't move in that direction, although it's a good direction, if you're not actually going to fulfill it. Because what could be worse than lying to God? But we'll go through it more in detail, but you see, it continues even in 5. He says, don't let your mouth cause your flesh to sin. Again, he's talking about the mouth, talking about speech. So he continues in the theme. But for our purposes, we want to understand what he's telling you initially is that the rote activity is something which has to be guarded against. And he hears all. That's what it means in that first verse in 4:17. He is close to hearing. I mean, he hears everything. Like Sforno says, he hears the words of all mouths. Okay, any questions, any comments?
None here.
Okay. Josh, Francesca? So we'll wrap it up here, and we'll pick up next Sunday, same time, all right? We'll continue.
All right, that sounds good.
Okay, great. All right, good week to everybody.
Okay, thanks, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rabbi. You have a good week, too.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye, everybody.